WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC on the day before Election Day. Good morning, everyone. And here are the top two ballot measures you can vote on in New York and New Jersey tomorrow. Casino gambling, yes or no, in New York, and a groundbreaking version of a minimum wage hike in New Jersey. It would link minimum wage increases to inflation, to the Consumer Price Index. New York also has two other interesting questions. Should a mining company be able to explore in some protected forest land in the Adirondacks if it donates more land than it's taking to wild forest status? And should judges have a mandatory retirement age of 70? They currently do. We have a special edition of the Brian Lehrer Show today, Direct Democracy in New York and New Jersey. What you need to know to vote on these four issues and some less contested ones also on the ballot that we'll also touch on. Let's begin with a debate on the New Jersey minimum wage referendum. Arguing for a yes vote is Millie Silva. She is Barbara Buono's running mate. She's the Democratic lieutenant governor candidate, in other words. She is executive vice president of the Healthcare Workers Union, 1199. SEIU. And arguing you should vote no, Thomas Bracken, president and CEO of the New Jersey Chamber of Commerce. Welcome, both of you, to WNYC. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
And this is the most interesting thing New Jerseyans have to vote on tomorrow if the polls are right. But I know, Millie Silver, you're hoping they're not. But make your case on this. Take our first 2 minutes and tell us, why is this good for New Jersey?
An increase to the minimum wage from $7.25 tied to the cost of inflation is an opportunity to raise over 400,000 people in New Jersey out of poverty. The $7.25 current rate is one that, if in fact it had been adjusted to inflation over 40 years, today it would be $10.74. So this vote on question two and a yes vote means that we will have the opportunity to move New Jerseyans from what are currently starvation wages in a step in the right direction so that they have more money in their pocket, which will be disposable income that will then be reinvested into our economy and is estimated to increase GDP by over $174 million.
So am I right that it does two things? It would raise the minimum wage in the state from $7.25 to $8.25 and tie future increases to the Consumer Price Index?
You are correct.
And Mr. Bracken, take a similar amount of time yourself and tell us, why is this bad for New Jersey?
Well, first of all, we are not opposed to an increase in minimum wage, and that's been something that's been characterized by our opposition. We are all for looking at the minimum wage and increasing it, and we did back the governor's proposal to increase it by a dollar over 3 years from the outset, and if it had been compromised and debated between a legislature and administration, I'm sure we would have backed any kind of compromise proposal. So we are for an increase in the minimum wage. But a couple things. First of all, this does not belong in our Constitution. It does not take the people on minimum wage out of poverty. That's going to take many more things other than just an increase in the minimum wage to take these people out of poverty. It's a start, and we would like to have that be a start for them, but it is not the cure-all to taking these people out of poverty. Secondly, the amount of money that this the amount of people this impacts, and Ms. Silva talked about the 400,000 people, we would say that's a high number, but let's say it's the right number for argument's sake. 400,000 people out of 8 million people in New Jersey is 5% of the population of New Jersey. The state constitution talks about any addition to the constitution being mandated by the legislature to have something relating to the public good. 5% of the population does not constitute the public good. It is not a thing, anything that belongs in our Constitution when it impacts 5% of the population, especially since it has a negative impact on many, many more people than that, would have a huge economic impact on the state of New Jersey, impact our competitiveness dramatically over the years, and really impede our ability to add jobs and keep companies here and bring companies into New Jersey.
Right.
And one last thing, the $174 million boost to our economy. I've heard the opposition say this is going to kickstart our economy, the boost to our economy. The annual GDP of the state of New Jersey is $500 billion. $174 million is about 0.03 of 1% of our economy. I don't think 0.03 of 1% has any impact on our economy, does not move the needle, and to make an argument that that's the reason for doing this is absolutely ridiculous.
Now, I want to open up the phones for our New Jersey listeners. The minimum wage proposal on the ballot tomorrow. You've heard the basic outlines. You heard the beginning of the conversation, the debate that we're having right now between Millie Silva, the Democratic lieutenant gubernatorial candidate, and Thomas Bracken, president and CEO of the New Jersey Chamber of Commerce. So listeners, if you want to weigh in, electioneering, welcome here on this day before the election. And if you have any questions about it, those are certainly welcome here for either of our debaters, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And Mr. Bracken, let me follow up on one of the things you said. We'll get to the various specific points. You said it wouldn't get minimum wage workers out of poverty. This would take the weekly salary for a 40-hour minimum wage worker from basically $15,000 a year to $17,000.
Right.
Does our social contract not owe a full-time worker at least that?
I'm not saying it doesn't. As I said, we are all for an increase in the minimum wage. So the amount that we're talking about is not the issue. It is not the issue. We backed the governor's proposal of a dollar over 3 years, and that was rejected by the legislature. If there would have been some kind of compromise between what the legislature wanted and the governor wanted, I'm sure we would have backed that. So the answer to your question is we understand that they have a need to increase their annual salary and their wages. We're for that. But this does not, as Ms. Silva said, take them out of poverty. They still have many other issues that need to be addressed to take
right.
these people out of poverty.
Now, I want to play a clip of Governor Christie for you, Ms. Silva, and get your reaction to it. He makes one of the same points that Mr. Bracken made a minute ago about why this is a constitutional amendment rather than a negotiation between the legislature and the governor. Here is, you might say, Christie being Christie.
Got the Senate president putting forward the truly ridiculous idea of amending our Constitution to raise the minimum wage. I told these folks all along that I am more than happy to discuss their idea to raise the minimum wage, but it has to be in the context of a number of other economic development and growth measures. I've told them that privately. I've said it publicly, but I will oppose amending our Constitution. That is just a stupid way to do it. That's not what the Constitution is there for. They control the legislature. They want to raise the minimum wage. Send me a bill and see what I'll do with it.
Governor Christie, Millie Silva, why not? Why is the Constitution for this kind of a measure?
Well, it's interesting that Governor Christie in his comments, and I also heard from Mr. Bracken, this sort of notion of compromise as a way to solve this issue in negotiation, when in fact that is exactly what the state legislature attempted to do. They presented proposals and were reasonable in understanding that a moment where you have 400,000 people in the state who are unemployed and people are struggling to make ends meet, we need to make sure, and I agree with you, Tom, that 825 is still not going to take people out of poverty, but it's it's a step in the right direction. But when you have a governor who is unwilling to do what is about meeting the social contract with the people of New Jersey, you then have to put it into the Constitution so that you can take politics out of the question as to whether or not people should live and work for poverty wages. And that is really what this is about. There was an effort that was made, and he vetoed the legislation. And so this is the best option available now to the voters of New Jersey.
He conditionally vetoed this. And then there was no opportunity for any compromise. The legislature almost immediately put this on the ballot without any compromise, without any debate. And that's the problem. And
let me jump in and keep
Governor
this clear
Christie.
Clear
Governor
for our
Christie.
Listeners.
Yeah.
Ms. Silva, if what I've heard the governor say is true, if what Mr. Bracken said, the same thing, is true, that the governor was for a minimum wage increase of a dollar over 3 years instead of a dollar right away per hour, is that not the basis for a negotiation?
That proposal is one where the increase that he proposed would have been wiped out by the second year. So in reality, that was not about workers actually being able to see more money.
What do you mean wiped out by the second year?
Because the proposal that he had in terms of increasing the rate, with the first year increase under the steps that he proposed, in fact, as inflation continues to increase, the workers would not, in fact, have received an actual wage increase. There wouldn't have been more dollars in people's pockets.
And just to ask you, Ms. Silva, about this issue of tying it to the consumer price index, I wonder if you see this as precedent setting for the nation, because I think a minimum wage index to inflation is kind of the holy grail for minimum wage advocates, since it has fallen so far behind inflation over the years, not just in New Jersey, but nationwide. This idea of taking it out of politics and tying future increases in the minimum wage to the consumer price the index, that's what this is really about, right? And this is precedent setting, in your opinion?
It is precedent setting, and it is, you know, this is the year where we recognize the 50th year anniversary of the March on Washington, where at the time that march was as much about marching for good jobs. And there was a demand 50 years ago to increase what had been the minimum wage of about $2 an hour and to increase it so that workers were able to make ends meet. If the minimum wage had been adjusted to the cost of living more than 40 years ago, in New Jersey, the minimum rate would be $10.74. So it really speaks to when in New Jersey you have one of the highest cost of livings, this is an opportunity to say that people need to be able to make ends meet. In New Jersey, the middle class has shrunk by 3% since 2009, and the wealth disparity between the wealthiest and the poorest has continued to grow. So voting yes for question two is, in fact, an opportunity to say we need to lift up that minimum rate so that people are better able to make ends meet. And I have to disagree with Mr. Bracken's earlier point about the number of people that would be affected because, in fact, over 429 New Jerseyans is equivalent to 11% of the state's workforce.
429,000,
And that is, in fact, also one quarter of those people are working parents. And the majority are women. So this is also an issue around economics as well as social justice. When you took a look at the growth of low-wage jobs.
Hey, Brian, do I get a chance to
you do. You absolutely do.
Hang on. Low-wage jobs that are predominantly
because
performed
I'm hearing a lot
by women.
I'm hearing a lot of political rhetoric that is
right.
And you got a long answer earlier, Mr. Bracken. But on those points, Tom Bracken, is the
I think, Brian, the bottom line of this is it doesn't cure the people's poverty condition. It helps. Let's use Ms. Silva's number of 11%. 11% does not meet the definition of public good. If something's going into our Constitution, into the guiding principles of our Constitution, that represents 11% on the positive side, and I would tell you probably represents many more on the negative side, is that something that meets the constitutional definition of public good? I don't think so. Public good to me is something that impacts the vast majority of the citizens of New Jersey and at least a majority. Even the high number of Ms. Silva of 11%, that doesn't even come close to meeting the majority. And also the issue of the CPI linkage And making it mandatory. You know, our legislature was elected to legislate, and legislating is how they've managed the minimum wage every other time in the history of New Jersey. Now to take away part of their, to abdicate part of their responsibility to legislate and put it in the Constitution is just beyond me from the standpoint of being disappointing with regard to the people in our legislature.
That's the part you really hate here, isn't it? Because business has won over and over again in keeping the rate of the minimum wage increase way lower than inflation, and you want to be able to do that again, correct?
Well, no. We as a business, we don't control the minimum wage. The legislature controls the minimum
wage. That's
what I mean. The fact that it's where it is not the business community's fault or the governor's fault. That's been the legislature's fault over the years.
Now, but it's the business community that lobbies hard against minimum wage increases, right?
I don't think I have never lobbied against a minimum wage increase in my life. I mean, we've always taken it from the standpoint that a minimum wage is that we need to be competitive with the minimum wage. We need to help our workforce. And the other side of it is when I heard the beginning of this broadcast, it talked about direct democracy as maybe an overall topic of this. You know, one of the things that makes states competitive and one of the states that makes states thrive is to have a vibrant free enterprise system. This takes part of the free enterprise system away from the business community. And it's a very bad precedent to set. Probably the worst state in the country that's had these kinds of precedents over and over is California. And look where that's gotten California. We do not need economic policy in our Constitution. There's no place for economic policy in our Constitution. And setting wages is economic policy. It'd be precedent-setting and on a very negetive precedent-setting and a very negative precedent-setting
side. Ms. Silva, you want to respond to that?
Certainly. Mr. Bracken, it's my understanding that the Chamber of Commerce, along with a couple of other organizations, have spent more than $1 million in an effort to strike down this effort. And I do believe that this is because there is an opportunity here to be able to do something which is about saying we're going to remove politics from the question of whether or not there's a responsibility of the state, and yes, set a precedent for the country that working people need to have a wage floor that allows them to be able to provide for their most basic needs. And this vote on Tuesday, tomorrow.
But why is that a constitutional issue, as he asks, rather than a matter of economic policy to be negotiated in the political sector?
I think it speaks to, as we understand that the United States today is the country that has the largest wealth disparity between the poorest and the wealthiest, we see the consequences when in this state we're bottom of the nation in job growth, we have a high unemployment rate, eighth highest in the nation, and people are struggling to make ends meet. This is about saying that in the Constitution and in the state of New Jersey, there is a firm belief that people who work have the opportunity to have a wage floor that will help them better make ends meet. And it is about our social obligation for a greater good.
This is
Brian. May I come in? Please?
I want to bring in some callers here, and you're both going to get plenty more opportunities to argue your points. If you're just joining us, this is the beginning of a special edition of the Brian Lehrer Show today for the day before Election Day, devoting almost the whole show to direct democracy, the seven questions on the New York and New Jersey ballots for Election Day tomorrow. And we're starting with a very contentious ballot question in New Jersey. Should the state constitution be amended to raise the minimum wage to $8.25 an hour from its current $7.25 and then have it increase with inflation with the consumer price index thereafter? My guests are Thomas Bracken, New Jersey Chamber of Commerce President and CEO, and Millie Silva, who's Executive Vice President of 1199 SEIU, the Healthcare Workers Union. She is also Barbara Buono's running mate in the gubernatorial election. Ms. Silva is the candidate for lieutenant governor on the Democratic side. Let's go to some of our many phone calls on this. Cliff in Elizabeth. Hello, Cliff. You're on WNYC.
Hi, Brian. Good morning. This question is for the Chamber of Commerce there.
Uh-huh.
I was watching something on C-SPAN the other day, and I guess the executive director for U.S. Chamber of Commerce was having some kind of discussion or something like that. And one of the last things that he said that really sticks in my mind was that people must have tried to kill the goose that laid the golden eggs. Like he wanted people to work in perpetuity, you know, like indentured worker. And I go into the supermarket these days and most loaf of bread in a couple of...
Right. Cliff, you know what? I get your question, and we have a terrible phone line as well. So let's put it to Mr. Bracken. If it's going to be a kind of killing the goose that lays the golden egg, I'm not sure if exactly in the terms that he laid it out there, but who do you think is actually going to get hurt? Which businesses are going to be affected, and who's going to eliminate jobs as a result?
Well, it's I don't know specifically which businesses will be affected, but I can tell you that the minimum wage is just the beginning. And there are a lot of other contracts in New Jersey that are linked to the minimum wage, which is going to push wages up in many, many industries and many, many different companies. So this is a trickle-up effect more than anything with contracts being linked as a starter to the rise in the minimum wage. So it could be very pervasive in New Jersey, the amount of wages that are increased and the amount of companies that have to do something about the impact on their profitability. And, you know, the profitability of companies is what allows companies and drives companies to stay and grow in New Jersey. So we want to try to keep the companies here and grow here. And anything that impacts their profitability should be gauged proportionately. And this is one thing that they can't gauge because the impact of this is taken out of their hands every year. And there will be a huge repercussion throughout the business community. And it's probably something that won't be felt immediately, but over time it'll continue to gnaw away at companies and probably continue to have companies look to move outside of the state of New Jersey and really turn away companies that might want to come into the state of New Jersey.
Ms. Silva, on that, if a small business has two or three employees, $2,000, $3,000 a year may not be the, or $2,000 a year per worker may not be the difference between hiring someone or not. But what about the business with 100 minimum wage workers suddenly facing $200,000 a year extra to maintain its current workforce and then up with inflation? Might that not result in fewer jobs?
Well, typically, you know, small businesses are used as a red herring to distract from the reality that it's usually big box stores and fast food employers who are employing the vast majority of minimum wage workers. And we have seen that in the efforts around the country of fast food workers raising attention to a call for a higher wage rate. And in practice, we know that there are states, at least 19 of them, who have increased the minimum wage. And in those states, the experience has not been to see a decrease in employment or to see that businesses are suffering as a consequence of it.
Ari in Perth Amboy, you're on WNYC. Hello, Ari.
Hi, Brian. Thank you for taking my call. I actually had my question answered by the previous conversation, so I actually have a follow-up to what this discussion that been happening, which is more about the relationship between profitability and social contract. That are they either-or scenarios, meaning can we have profitability at the expense of a social contract? Do we have to have a social contract at the expense of profitability? Or is there a way that we can have both at the same time?
Are you suggesting an answer to your own question?
I'm not sure. I mean, I have my own thoughts, but I'm interested to hear what the guests have to say.
All right. We'll get you both on this. Ms. Silva first.
I think that it doesn't have to be an either-or situation, and that, in fact, where you have employers who are responsible and have made efforts to increase wages for their employees, you actually see that they are both sustaining the people who provide the work for their business, and at the same time that those employees are then able to reinvest into the economy, and that can be a win-win.
Mr. Bracken?
I don't think it has to be either or either. However, you know, companies, and I was in the banking business for 42 years, and I've seen many companies. They all have a social contract. They all know their obligation to their workers. They all know their obligation to the state. The healthier the company, the stronger their social contract. That only makes sense. So my point is companies that are strong, a state that's strong economically, the more the social contract will be met.
But if a business is paying workers only $15,000 a year or $17,000 a year with this increase even, does that meet its social contract obligations, or does that not shift onto the taxpayers the burden of subsidizing those workers with food stamps and other benefits that they're eligible for at that wage?
Well, as I said, this is not the panacea for the social contract and the panacea for taking people out of poverty. There are many other things that need to be addressed, and this is just a small part of the equation, or part of the equation. So that's why the inclusion of this in the Constitution, which doesn't solve a problem, makes it even more absurd.
What do you have in mind? Because why doesn't a, separate from education and impoverished upbringings and anything else, why doesn't a company have an obligation, or shouldn't it have an obligation, to pay its lowest paid employees a living wage, especially if they're adults?
As I said earlier, we are for an increase in the minimum wage, so I agree with what you said. But you have to understand that this impacts a small number of people. It doesn't solve the problem. And secondly, I think, quite frankly, because of the passion of the legislature to have this passed by putting it on the ballot, if it is defeated on Tuesday, which we hope it is defeated, this will go right back to the legislature, and they will propose a minimum wage increase. You heard what the governor said. If there was a proposal put on the table, he'd talk about it. The minimum wage is going to go up in New Jersey either way, whether this is voted in or voted out. However, if it's voted in and voted yes, there are significant economic problems that are going to prevent the state from meeting its potential from an economic basis. And that's something we should not saddle our state with.
Right.
If it's defeated, the minimum wage increase will go through, I am sure, legislatively, and we will avoid the severe economic problems that will be impacted by the state of New Jersey if it's
Scott,
passed.
Scott in Queens, you're on WNYC. Hi, Scott.
Hi, thanks for taking the call. I was just wondering about a practical and legal question, and that is, neither of you guests have talked about maybe if they know the percentage of high school and college kids staying with their parents who certainly don't need to be making more than minimum wage. I mean, my daughter just asked about a job. I don't want to pay her, you know, $10 an hour when I would be paying that same thing to a single 30-year-old mother of three children.
Scott, that's an interesting question. And Ms. Silva, some people argue that there should be a two-tier minimum wage based on age. So a high school kid makes less than an adult trying to support a family. Do you think that idea would be workable?
Well, I think that many people don't realize that, in fact, minimum wage workers, the facts show, the majority are, in fact, adults. They're adults with high school diplomas.
But that's why the question is about doing it by age, so that the adults do get a higher wage than teenagers, high school students, say, under 18, who are doing jobs.
You know, I think from our perspective, it's important that anyone who is performing a service and doing a job should be paid a decent rate of pay, and an increase in the minimum wage should apply to all without necessarily having two separate tiers.
All right. We're just about out of time. Voters, you've heard the basic arguments on this minimum wage and tying it to the Consumer Price Index. Ballot question to change the New Jersey Constitution tomorrow. I wonder if either of you have a thought on the only other ballot question for New Jersey voters, just so we touch it at one point during the show today. It would allow veterans organizations to use the proceeds of existing games of chance to support their organizations. Ms. Silva, do you have a position on this? Do you know the current limitations on that, or what kinds of betting operations veterans groups run?
I'm less familiar with the details of that proposal, and so that's one that I would hold off on.
You and Ms. Bono have not taken a position one way or another on that ballot question?
We haven't, Brian.
And Mr. Bracken?
I know a little bit about it, and I think it makes some sense. Can I make one comment, though, Brian?
Give me a morsel on that one, okay? Give me a 15-second bite on why you think it makes sense. The veterans proceeds question, and then you can make your closing argument.
I've read the ballot question, and to me the ballot question makes sense. I have no detailed knowledge of it, but I can't really comment other than that. I've read the ballot question, and I think it makes some sense.
Right. I don't think it's very controversial.
All right. No, it's not.
30 seconds to close up, each of you. Mr. Bracken.
You know, we're being asked to change our Constitution for only the second time in the history of the Constitution with something that impacts a very limited number of people in New Jersey and hurts the state economically. We are not for we are not against the minimum wage increase. We've been characterized as that, but we're not. We're against putting this into our Constitution. And I guess my point is our entire million-dollar campaign has been to educate the public as to the pros and cons of this, because I think if anybody's being asked to change their Constitution, they should be fully informed as to what they're doing. Our opposition, who are voting yes, have one thing, and they've only said one thing: please increase the minimum wage. They have not bothered to educate the people on the negatives of the linkage to the CPI, nor the negatives of putting us into our Constitution. We think that's very, very disingenuous. So we are just saying, please look at our website, look at what we're saying, go into the voting booth fully informed, understand the pros and the cons, and I think if they do that, they will understand the reason to vote no.
And Ms. Silva.
Voting yes to question two tomorrow on Election Day is an opportunity to increase the minimum wage so that the over 400,000 New Jerseyans who are working for that rate are better able to make ends meet. It is about saying that the men and women who bag our groceries, who perform services for us, are the ones who are going to be able to make ends meet, especially in the state of New Jersey, which has one of the highest cost of living. It is about the majority of people who are adults, who have high school diplomas, they are working parents, they are majority women who need an opportunity in order to be able to make ends meet. And that's why we're asking voters to vote yes on question two.
Millie Silva,
that will be done, Brian, if it's voted no.
Executive Vice President of 1199 SEIU, the Healthcare Workers Union. She is Senator Barbara Bono's running mate in the gubernatorial election, the Democratic nominee for lieutenant governor, and Thomas Bracken, the president and CEO of the New Jersey Chamber of Commerce. Thank you both very much.
Thank you very much.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and we continue in a minute with our Direct Democracy special, all seven questions on the New York and New Jersey ballots for Election Day tomorrow. Up next, should New York State maintain a mandatory retirement age of 70 for judges? Stay tuned.